CAPSI Podcast Series, Conversations on African Philanthropy.
Welcome to yet another episode on Conversations on African Philanthropy with me, Pegenkosi Moyo. We are in Zanzibar and I happened to meet Petra Kuria. Petra is with the Legal Services Facility. I was intrigued because Petra is only 23 years old and she is already in the space of philanthropy, and I decided to have a conversation with her. Petra, welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for agreeing to do this interview or conversations on African philanthropy.
I'm honored.
We run this episode in order to talk to different actors in the philanthropic space to understand what drives them, what is that they are doing, but also what do they hope to see in future in terms of, you know, the space that philanthropy is and some of the activities and interventions that take place. So in your case, I was just intrigued. What if I were to ask you, I'm sure your perspective on philanthropy is going to be completely different from my perspective, given the age gap and among that. And you are here in the space where a lot of the people here are people who have been in this space for a long time. For a young person like you, what does philanthropy mean to you? And secondly, what is its potential?
So I think firstly I need to start with the work that we do and then link it. So for Legal Services Facility, we focus on access to justice and we are donor funded. So I can literally just put a cap there.
Yeah.
My interest there is then on the sustainability of the donor funding. And when it ends, how we'll be able to sustain ourselves, if it ends, putting a cap on that, whether we'll be able to sustain ourselves. But within that, our projects impact directly the communities in Tanzania. So utilizing the communities within themselves, it's kind of like a Maasai-like tradition where you have a student who's excelled and then the community comes together to take them to university abroad. So that kind of analogy is exactly why I'm interested in philanthropy. Community-driven impact and also decolonizing aid. So that's where my interest came in.
So your view on philanthropy will be almost like collective action by, you know, communities or individuals to make a difference in somebody's life. And the analogy of, you know, a child is raised by a village, basically. But for young people, what is it that frustrates you about philanthropy?
I think the first thing is involvement.
Yeah.
We're not involved. There's always so many conversations on youth, and we're not there to give our input.
Somebody speaking about you.
Exactly. And you see this with, we used to see it, at least now there's this development, but we used to see this with gender, and we're seeing it now with disability, but there is conversations on those particular issues, and the prime people that it associates with are not there. So that's the first thing that frustrates me about philanthropy. But the second, I'm academically a lawyer, so the lack of structure. There isn't structures that enable philanthropy or that define philanthropy. Yes, we have a definition by the dictionary, but there is no laws that aid to make it accessible. There is no guidebook. So I would say secondly, the structure.
If we stick a bit with the issue of structural laws, policies, you are right. I mean, across the continent, there is no single law, except in Mauritius. Mauritius has something called the Foundation Law. So that's the only country that I'm aware of that has an act that is used to register what we could call philanthropy. But right across the continent, philanthropies are governed by, you know, laws that have to do with civil society broadly, NGOs, or even non-profit companies. So that's an issue. But why would you see the need for regulation to be topmost in the way in which philanthropy is practiced?
So when we talk about law, people often get scared because
yeah.
they think it's right and going against the government.
Yeah, yeah.
So when I mention regulation in relation to philanthropy, I'm speaking for the use of it as a guide for people to not just give 10,000 and say, hey, I've given. Yeah. For them to be able to give the same amount, but for them to see where their 10,000 is going.
Yeah.
And I believe that that will create sustainable philanthropy rather than people just thinking, oh, I gave money, I don't even know where it's going.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the continuity of that is then it's cut short.
Right,
Yeah.
Or the inverse, it could also lead to dependency.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the other part. Yeah, okay. So what would you want to see as changes in the philanthropic space? I mean, you're already working for an institution that is part of the philanthropy ecosystem, the legal services facility. But you're also taking part in networks like the East Africa Philanthropy Network, where you meet all these institutions that are philanthropic actors. Some of them have been around for years and years. Others are completely new. But as a young person sitting here, listening to all these old people, what is it that you would want to see changed?
I don't think I would want to see change.
Yeah.
I'd want to see theory put into practice.
Yeah.
So we have all these amazing discussions. I don't want them to end here. I want them to be implemented. So we've been talking about regulations, or let's make philanthropy its own industry. I want that to be implemented, put into practice. Let there be a report after this. Let there be discussions in that report of what was stated after the conference. I want to see theory put into practice.
So far, it's the second day. What has the experience been for you?
It's been a great networking opportunity for me.
Yeah.
In relation to the content, I've learned a lot. My generation, or me myself, I tend to think I also know a lot. But it's really nice to come into a space where it's relaxed and you feel like you are learning new things. You can challenge the new things. You can, through your challenge, you can gain conversation inside.
Yeah.
So that has been really exciting, but I think particularly would be the chance to meet EDs, professors like yourself that I would not have the platform to meet otherwise.
Yeah, great. And so my other interest is just to know, you know, you. So obviously one would see you and immediately want to talk to you about the work that you do. But you just mentioned that you are trained in law. For example. So maybe take us through yourself, the background, and what has prepared you to end up with the legal services facility.
Okay, that's always it's a hard nut to crack. Because at 23, there's only so much experience that I have. But I like to screen away from the conservative view of experience.
Yeah.
So I went to law school, which is, I went to uni in the UK, did my degree, realized that my passion was development and intellectual property.
Yeah.
Came back, I'm currently still pursuing the bar as I'm working, but so after coming back, I then worked for a consultancy that was taken in by the UN. We did gender training, gender mainstreaming, and a project around training UNDP women. Then I started getting to training and leadership, and I started talking at schools about developing talent. My interest now is in education, poverty alleviation, gender empowerment. And then after that, I also got a chance to talk at Muimbili University. I've gotten a chance to talk at other schools just on training your talent. I should have mentioned prior on my background, I actually got a scholarship to my university because of cultivating my talent and my skills. So I'm really, really passionate about telling other people that they can get opportunities elsewhere by cultivating skills that are not conservative, like academics only. Yes, they're important, but the generation or the sculpting of other skills is a path I don't think many currently in Africa know how to utilize to get them forward. That's me. I'm also very, very passionate about intellectual property and how that can help economic empowerment. That's again going back to decolonization.
I was going to ask you about the intellectual property expertise that you have gained. I think there are very few people in the philanthropy sector who would say they are trained firstly in, you know, understanding intellectual property, but also how it can be utilized for economic development. So if you were to think ahead, how do you see yourself utilizing that expertise in the philanthropic space that you are already engaged in? Because you yourselves fund so many institutions and they produce intellectual property, right? Mm-hmm. Or you produce intellectual property and there are so many. Now, if you put together all these foundations and the amount of innovations that they are supporting, the amount of research and development that they are supporting, I bet that not much has been done to deal with the question of intellectual property. And that's a lot of capital. Data is currency. IP is even wealth.
So the system has actually been put in place to aid us to an extent. Although I can use Tanzania as an example, our IP laws are taken copy-paste from the UK. The first thing we could do is to try to sculpt those to our own culture. So instead of excluding things like traditional dancing from IP, we can see a way to protect those instead of allowing other nations to utilize them for their own economic gain without us gaining benefit. The second thing when it comes to economic empowerment and youth and what we can do to implement actual progress is to actually train lawyers to be able to register intellectual property. So again, theory into practice. There's a lot of lawyers who know the theory, but if you ask them to register trademark, copyright, they don't know where to start or where to end. And therefore, entrepreneurs don't have a place to go, to get their information on intellectual property. So it's the duty of philanthropic organizations such as LSF to then take it upon themselves to teach these entrepreneurs that come up with these amazing innovations that they have to protect their own items before they're regenerated and copied in other nations for their own economic benefit. And I really think it's going to take a lot of investment. It will take a lot of investment, and I'm not going to underplay that because I protecting your IP is a long, long journey. It's not a one-day thing. It also does take a lot of investment in understanding why the product has a USP or is unique in itself. But I think that is the starting point.
And you also mentioned something that says to me you are very much attuned to the current debates. You talked about decolonizing aid or decolonizing philanthropy. What does it look like for a young person like you to say aid or philanthropy has been decolonized?
I think the key word for me would be reliance. It's a different thing to be able to say we receive a certain amount from a Western donor. Than to say we rely solely on them. Not even solely, just rely. That if they were to take it away, our projects would not be able to function or to progress without it.
So in your view, if aid can be given in such a way that it doesn't cause reliance, then that's another form of decolonizing. There's a lot that's going on. I think, you know, I'm fascinated by the fact that even young people are very much attuned to the need to decolonize aid, because this has been a long-standing debate. So what's next for Petra?
Petra is currently reading on intellectual property in order to be able to help the entrepreneurs that are creating the innovations. She's also cultivating her skills in being able to speak so that she can speak more on education and curriculum development. That's also something within education that's important. But also I'm hoping that I'll be more prevalent in the philanthropic space. Yeah. As an individual and as Alisa.
I can't but not recognize that you are the youngest in this setting. And when I looked around, there are probably other young people, but you are basically the youngest. Did you feel intimidated by the audience at all?
Not really.
Not at all.
No.
Yeah.
I think it's more to do with how I'm received.
Yeah.
And I will actually like to commend the members or the people who have, the attendees, the delegates of this conference, because in every conversation I've had, I've been received well, just like that, like you have received me. And that helps with feeling at peace and like I'm where I belong, right?
Yeah.
The receiving of people who already belong to
society,
to the industry.
So if you were to give a message to young people who probably are sitting by the fence, hoping to be invited into philanthropic spaces, what would be your message to them?
Utilize your network. I think that's underplayed and understated. Utilize the network around you. You are five people away from the person that you need to meet.
Great. Thank you so much, Petra, for making the time. I know this was under pressure. It's almost dinner time. And I said, let's do this. I'm intrigued by the fact that you are here and you're participating of, you know, in the audience. You stand out as the youngest. But I'm glad that we managed to talk, and wishing you all the best.
Thank you.
In your future studies, in your future engagements within the philanthropic sector, but also in creating these networks and potentially being the leader that you are and the leader that you are going to be for young people across the continent.
Thank you. I'm honored to have been here.
Thank you so much. That was Petra Kuria from the Legal Services Facility. She was speaking to us here on the margins of the East Africa Philanthropy Forum. Thank you for watching. See you next time.
You've been listening to the CAPSI podcast series, Conversations on African Philanthropy.